Good evening.
Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Good evening, I'm Seb. I'm with Sharon and Brian.
Hello, good evening.
How are we all?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we're good. I'm good. I'm a little bit away from the mic because Seb's driving tonight.
Uh-oh.
I'm just the instructor. Good.
So what have we seen?
Well, for this week, I have seen two films at the cinema for our movie review show. I have seen Adrift.
And can you give us a brief sort of summary?
Yeah, which is Peril on the Sea type film. Mm-hmm. And then I've also seen Leave No Trace, which is about someone's desire for isolation.
Right.
And how they, it's a man and how he sort of takes his daughter along with him, really. But looking, if we start off with Adrift, as that's the first film I saw this week, it's a new release, and it stars, it's got two main characters in it. It's Shailene Woodley plays a lady called Tammy, and Sam Coughlin plays her sort of partner, boyfriend, called Richard. And they are, this is based on a true story, so it's set firmly in a sort of place and time. It's set in the mid-1980s, and Shailene, the primary character is Tammy, who is played by Shailene. And basically, Tammy is someone who grew up in like a really sort of slightly dysfunctional family. Her parents were both 15 when she was born. And so she was raised by her grandparents, and her mum and dad sort of came and went, and that sort of left her with this slightly footloose feeling where she just had this sort of sense of impermanence. So when she sort of became 16, she set out on her own and decided to travel around the world. And on her adventures, she ended up sort of crewing on a yacht, sort of chalet maiding, you know, doing the maids in the sort of chalets, working in a harbour, working on the boats, and sort of basically just drifting her way around the Pacific. And at the beginning of the film, she has ended up in Tahiti. But I'll sort of explain a little bit how the film is structured. It's an interesting film construct in that you start with one main event, which is a catastrophic hurricane that has left her on a yacht. And the yacht has been disabled. It's been demasted, and she's only got a small jib sail left, and she's sort of on this yacht. And then the film is told then in parallel. You then see how she got to this point, and then what she does from that point on. So it's told in sort of like these two parallel stories, working backwards and working forwards until the two films sort of meet again. How it comes full circle, how the story that is telling backwards sort of gets you to where she is now. So you sort of work out how did she get to this place. So it's not a straightforward, you know, Monday to Friday narrative. It sort of starts on a Wednesday, then you go back to Monday, then you carry on to Friday. So it's looking at this sort of period of time, but it's based on this woman's her experience of what happened after she was set adrift when her yacht was demasted. So that's where you start. So the narrative going backwards is basically how she met Richard, and Richard, played by Sam Coughlin, is based on this. Richard, who Tammy met when she was 24 and he was 33, and they'd been sort of seeing each other for about 6 months, basically just drifting around the Pacific Islands, travelling together. They met, they sort of decided that, yeah, they had a lot in common, and they started to travel together. And then one of his friends say, look, I'll pay you to charter my yacht back to the United States, crossing the Pacific, but I'll pay you. We have to leave. We want to take the yacht back to its home harbour. Whilst we can't take it ourselves, we've got to go back to London. There's been a family emergency because he's English and she's American. And so Tammy and Richard set off across the Pacific, something like a 6 weeks at sea planned journey on this a yacht. It's a cross, but it's a motorised yacht. So it's under sail, but it has got sort of motors as well. And as they're heading across the Pacific, they meet this level 4 hurricane that has basically sort of built up unexpectedly. It wasn't forecast, long term forecast, but they saw there was a storm coming, and they thought, okay, we'll steer north of it. And then they just get swept up to it, and then they have this sort of devastating event. And then you see the events moving backwards. And then the story moving forward is what happens to them both after that, and the consequences of being on a yacht with no mainmast, trying to navigate the old-fashioned way. They've got no navigational equipment left. Their radios don't work because the mast is gone, so their means of broadcasting long range is gone. Mm-hmm. And so it's working out by using sextants and watches and compasses, trying to work out their position and then trying to sail to the nearest point of land when they're trying to make Hawaii, which is basically like a dot in an ocean. And then if you miss it, but if you're 2 degrees out, you'll sail past it and then you've got like another 500 miles before you hit another landfall. Or if you go the other way, again, you've got hundreds of miles before they're aiming for a dot in the ocean. And the only food they've got is what they'd stocked up for a 5-week journey. They hadn't prepared for being at sea for months on end. And so they suddenly have to find out, okay, can we fish? Can we drive off the yacht, you know, sort of without any equipment? Can you, you know, how to desalinate water or how to make a water filter? These sort of things they just encounter. So basically it's the story of, you know, how do you survive in these sort of dramatic circumstances? And what adds this extra twist to it is that it's based on a true event. And at the end of the film, you see sort of footage of the real couple.
Oh, wow.
Sort of vintage footage of them when they're sort of together and later on. So you see, yeah, that these are, and they get the actors to look remarkably like the real people.
That's brilliant.
So yeah, it was an interesting, it's sort of interesting seeing that sort of a catastrophe, and you wonder, and you obviously the whole thing about these sort of films is, you know, you put yourself in their shoes in many ways.
Yeah. You talking about the narrative structure of it, so you said it kind of goes forwards and backwards in times. Do you find that actually works well watching it, or does it get confusing?
Without any spoilers, there's some certain events throughout the film that it makes sense the way the narrative has been set out. That had it been set out in a traditional way, you know, Monday to Friday way, then you would think, yes, you'd lose those elements of surprise. You'd lose those points of sort of revelation almost. So the way they structured it makes sense at the end of the film they've done it that way.
Okay, so
but when you first watch it, you're thinking, why don't you just tell the story? Just tell the story. But they don't. They've obviously done this sort of like split narrative. But yeah, you understand why at the end.
Okay, that's intriguing. So do you kind of, is there enough in it to keep you interested?
I did, yeah, I thought so, yes, because it's one of those films you think, oh, you know, for those in peril on the sea, not many people of us are going to go sort of sailing across the Pacific on, you know, on a yacht and face these circumstances. But it's the same with any of these circumstances. It sort of boils down to like the human condition, doesn't it? You know, do you have that will to survive, and do you have that the means to adapt to your environment, to say, okay, this is the situation I'm in, what do I have to do to get through this situation, and are you prepared to do it? Because at the beginning of the film, she's quite a passionate vegetarian and a vegan, and she's just like, you know, I don't want to cause anything to, nothing should die for me, and nothing should make me to suffer for me. And so when they're in this dire situation, they've only got the food on them. They've got, you know, sort of peanut butter and tins of pilchards. And it's like, can you turn down the tins of pilchards when your life depends upon it?
So it's really testing the morals.
Yeah, it's just making to have reevaluate, you know, okay, what is more important, my survival ultimately, or at the cost of, you know, against her principles, that, you know, that it's going to cost someone else, something else, its life. And she does have to make herself go fishing and then catch fish and then eat fish. Mm-hmm. And that's a big, for her, that's like a big step to take. It's just like, you know, I can't do it. And then you have to do it. Because this is what survival is. It's sometimes doing things that you think, I couldn't possibly do that, and then having to do it.
So what would you rate it?
I would probably give it, a 3.5 to 4. Because I think it did help. There's one element in it that again makes sense at the end, because at the halfway through you're thinking, I don't think that would be possible, I don't think that would happen. And it just, you sort of keep thinking back at it, thinking, what are the odds of that? And then at the end you go, now I get it. and it makes sense. That's because the narrative structure, I think it they probably did that for this reason. But when you first see this, there's one event, when you first see that event, you're thinking, oh, that's just almost unbelievable. But then you're in your back of your head, you're thinking, well, it's based on a true story, so it can't be that unbelievable. But then it... your doubts are then put to rest later on.
Yeah.
So, but Harper's, but that it was a bit of a niggle when you're watching it, so it distracted it slightly from just that complete immersion. So I'd give it like a 3.5 rather than an unequivocal 4. But there was very well, I thought the actors were well presented in it. Shailene Woodley, most people know her from the Divergent films, and is it Big Little Lies?
Oh, I'm not sure.
There's a television series with Nicole Kidman and...
I've got something on that somewhere, but yeah.
She was in The Fault in Our Stars as well,
The Fault in
she?
Our Stars, yes, yeah. She was. Yeah, but I think most people would know her from The Divergence, which... Yeah. She was good, but...
Yeah, it's one of those films.
And Sam Claflin, he's sort of been in lots of things. He's... I was just thinking, you know, he's... When you narrow down on what he's been in lately, he's been in... That he was in Our Finest, he was a whack, he was in Snow White and the Huntsman. Farming of his early role in lots of things, hasn't he? He just become, you know, one of these sort of faces of our modern acting world. But no, I thought they both did it very well.
Did you see The Mercy as the film earlier on this year?
I didn't, but it did remind me of that. Yeah, again, that was one man's, how that isolation sort of...
That's right. Donald
Crowhurst.
How
that sort of isolation for him drove him mad, effectively, didn't it?
That's right, and the fact that he knew he couldn't ever get back. He just knew that.
Yeah.
If he did get back, everything in his life would be lost.
Yeah, because it would be he'd stake everything on that race, hadn't he?
And so in this, it's kind of the reverse. They've got to get back, otherwise they are lost. They've gone. Right.
Yeah, but so I think it's interesting, you could sort of do that, and then with the next film we're talking about, Leave No Trace, about what isolation does to people. For some people, it can be crushing, and it's that you know, like with Donald Crowhurst, being on his own, he just couldn't handle it.
No.
And they do explore that what isolation means in Adrift, and you know being at sea literally with no land in sight, no help in sight, and there's this bit where they hallucinate and they think they see a trawler, and they're like, no, why don't they stop, and then they realize that they dreamt it, and then they woke up in their dream almost and firing off flares, and they're thinking, why are you ignoring us? And then it was like it was gone. And it was like, did I just imagine that? And it was like, yes, it was just a hallucination. It was very real to you, but it wasn't there.
And you keep on saying they, because it was Tammy and her boyfriend.
Yes.
And how much of it is a love story, and how much of it is a story of human survival?
Well, it's certainly an element of love story, because their relationship, and she, I think people probably would describe him as the love of her life, that they found each other, and that they... for each other, they were the, you know, they found the right person who sort of just, even though there's like 9 years difference, so I think 9 years is nothing, but even though they sort of make an emphasis, you know, well, he's slightly older man, I think they just sort of found the right person in each other, so their sort of relationship is quite an important part of the film. And when they sort of see it, the narrative goes backwards to how they met, their relationship and how they met and how they ended up on the yacht together is quite key to your emotional investment in their story.
And he's injured, isn't he?
Yes.
Being a bit of a spoiler there, but so that makes it more difficult.
Yes, during this catastrophic sort of hurricane that, he is badly injured.
Looking at Rotten Tomatoes, which I do, as you know, for the show, the tomato meter says 73% of the critics liked it, so a resounding munch in that case. And Michael Bond of the Mail on Sunday said, in other words, it's Woodley alone, that's the girl, who, as the extraordinary, resourceful Tammy, who makes this watery weepy worth catching. That's what he calls it. and frequent flashbacks to the... This is Edward Porter in the Sunday Times. Frequent flashbacks to the pair's happier times on dry land weaken the narrative grip of the story, he thinks. And the slightly final twist shows that Woodley hasn't quite severed a course away from her young adult fan base.
Yes, I suppose, yeah, there's... Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think it was aimed at a young adult audience, though, at all. I think it was squarely aimed at an adult, you know, the more mature audience. Because it's, yeah, you have that sort of love story element, and their relationship is, you know, gives you that heart to, you know, so you're invested in it, in that, in survival for this couple. But it's not dependent upon her sort of youth credentials, really, because when I'm looking at her, I tend to think she looks older than she is to me. I don't think of her as being someone in their early 20s. I always think of them as being slightly older anyway. So when she gets saying, I'm only sort of 24, I think, really? I'd put you down at more like 28. So I didn't think of her as being like this, you know, ingenue in peril. I thought of her as just this sort of resourceful young woman who, you know, is in this difficult situation, and she's sort of risen to the challenge of surviving in the most, yeah, catastrophic circumstances.
I've got an audience review here, strangely enough, by Brian C.
Right.
But not me.
Not you. I'm sure you'd find a better alias.
It's a 5 out of 5. At last, a sailing survival movie that is accurate to what might happen out there. As one who's crossed the Pacific on a yacht, it is a perilous and lonely adventure, I know. This movie brings it to life as it was. Ah, but it is also a timeless love story of romance in the South Seas. Add to this the brilliant acting of Shailene Woodley, and you get a winner. We went to see it with 6 Ocean Passage veterans. All agreed, it's wonderful.
Oh, good.
All right, we'll be right back after the break.
Radio with the community at heart. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Have you ever experienced a light lunch or just a snack on a double-decker bus? Well, now you can at the Bus Stop Cafe, situated in Hollyhurst Park, Branstow, Sandown. We open 7 days a week, where you can sit back and enjoy tea, coffee, a cold drink, sandwiches, light lunches, smoothies and shakes, and yummy, yummy cakes in this diverse setting. And there's free on-site parking. We cater for all occasions, birthdays, clubs, parties. Check out our feedback and customer reviews on Facebook. The Bus Stop Cafe, Hollyhurst Park, Branstow, Sandown.
Hey guys, it's Lucas, male solo artist on the Isle of Wight. Looking for 80s and 90s entertainment? Look no further. Lucas is an up-and-coming solo artist on the island and will surely make those occasions a little bit special. Pubs, bars, hotels, weddings and much more. Do you want to book me? Contact me on Facebook on my page, Lucas Male Solo Artist. Thank you.
ICEC in Freshwater, the catering equipment company. We service, repair, refurbish and sell catering equipment. We can also purchase equipment if required, whether it's part exchange or brand new. We also deliver. To find out how we can help with your catering equipment needs, call us on 01983 756 628 or check out our website www.icec1.co.uk.
For over 70 years, White Building Materials have been the leading supplier of construction and building materials on the Isle of Wight, offering ready-mix concrete, decorative aggregates, concrete blocks and so much more. They're right here on your doorstep, unless of course you haven't built it yet, in which case you need White Building Materials. For more information or if you have any questions regarding products and services, contact them on 01983 524 822 or check out the website whitebuildingmaterials.com. White Building Materials. Get your asphalt into gear and call them today.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, has a limited number of advertising spots available. Give your business the boost it needs and reach across the island. Email our team today, marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Movie Review Show. This is Zeb. I'm with Sharon and Brian.
Hello.
Hiya. Good.
Well, we've talked about what isolation does to someone when it's forced upon them. This next film I'm looking at, Leave No Trace, is about what happens, how someone seeks isolation for their own personal reasons and for their own peace of mind. So it's quite a good, like the compare and contrast with Adrift. This is how, you know, someone actively wants to be alone. So the film Leave No Trace is made by the people who made Winter's Bone, which is what sort of thrust Jennifer Lawrence into the consciousness of most sort of cinema goers. And this is another film which a teenage girl is sort of up there front and centre. It's the story of a teenage girl, I forget the name of the actress, but the character's name is Tom. And she is, when you see that the film opens, she's living in the woods in the Pacific Northwest of America with her dad, played by Ben Foster. And they are living as, I don't know how you'd say it, as off-grid people. They live in a camp. They have a camp where they have access to civilization. So they have tents. They have a limited amount of propane gas. They wear normal clothes. But they live in isolation. They forage for their food, but they do supplement it with bought things. But they live most of their time on their own in the woods. And every now and then you sort of see them spotting like park rangers, because they live in outside of the city of Portland in Oregon. So I don't know which national park that is, but it's one of the big American sort of parks. And so it's managed land. It's not private land. It's sort of state-owned, but it's managed park land. And so they're living there on their own. The father's, she's sort of late, mid-late teens, I suppose, about 14 or 15. And he's obviously a man in his 40s. And every now and then you see him, the way he behaves, you get the feeling, and the certain noises upset him, and he has nightmares. And it becomes clear as the story goes on that he is a war veteran. He's served time. He doesn't tell you where he served time, but you get the feeling he's been in one of the desert conflicts, because you hear sounds of helicopters, and that sort of noise sort of really distresses him. So he's probably in Afghanistan or Iraq or one of these sort of modern conflicts. So he is the one who basically craves isolation, that he needs to be surrounded by quiet and sort of basically nature for him to feel. He needs to feel the ground beneath him to know that he's okay. Where his daughter isn't in quite the same situation. She needs to be with him, so she adapts to, you know, to living where they live. You get the feeling that they've lived there for quite some time, that she's always been homeschooled, that she's never been to school, and that when her mother was alive, you don't understand, you don't know where or how her mother died, but we know that she is dead, and that it's just the two of them. But they have raised her, they've educated her, and that she's sort of resourceful and resilient. And they have drills, you know, that where they see anyone, they have a drill where she has to go and hide, and then he'll see if he can find her by tracking her and seeing where she is. So they're isolated, and they want to keep the world at bay. But they do go into the city of Oregon when they need supplies or when they need something. They will recontact with the real world, but they choose to live off grid. And so far, sort of so good for them. Obviously, they've been living like this for some time. They know how to forage. They can identify what's edible and what's not. They can live off the land. And they've got each other for sort of safety and survival. But they do seek out, you know, sort of civilization to trade. And because he's a veteran, he gets free medication for his like PTSD, and basically he trades it to other PTSD veterans, and they give him money so then he can then buy what they need. He doesn't take any medication. He's decided that that's not the way he wants to get his life back in balance. He can get back in balance by being closer to the sort of the natural world. And then everything sort of starts to crumble a little bit when they're discovered. She's out sort of basically foraging one day, and a hiker sort of stroke runner sees her, and she sort of hides, and she thinks, have I got away with it? She's not sure that if she's got away with it or not, so she hides. And then it turns, and then the next day the forest rangers turn up and the police turn up with dogs and with sort of a search team, because they think there's a teenage girl in peril in the woods. So they go swoop in, they sort of take her into sort of protective custody, and they arrest her dad, and then they sort of run all these psychometric tests on them, finding out, you know, why are you living in there. To sort of, you know, the social services, they see a homeless man with his vulnerable teenage daughter that they're sharing a tent. So that's not respecting her boundaries as a sort of growing teenage girl, and that, you know, it's not appropriate necessarily for, you know, and so who says what's appropriate and who's not, but they think, well, this is not appropriate. As a teenage girl, you need to have your own room, you need to have your own space, you need to be able to, you know, be surrounded by security and social peer groups. And for him, they're saying, if you're suffering from nightmares, if you're suffering from, you know, the effect of being in a combat situation, you need support, you need, you know, structure. And so for the best will in the world, people look at them and think, we need to help you, we need to give you what you don't necessarily want, but we think you need to have this, we need to give you structure, we need to give you a society, we need to give you a life that we would recognise as being valid. And so they are given this, he's found a job in his place that employs sort of veterans. They've given this sort of house to live in. She's sort of put, you know, in like a peer group, and they're like going, hey, everything's fine. And then she adapts to this new way of life, and then, but he gets arrested again. It's like, no, this is not where they want to live. So they take off again. And this sort of follows a pattern that they find somewhere safe, they stay there for a little while, but then he starts thinking, there's too many people, there's too much, we don't need things, we just need each other. And so he wants to withdraw more and more from society, where she's now finding herself more and more torn towards other people, towards having a roof over her head. And so you get this sort of bit of conflict between what he needs and what she wants. And so there's a little element in the film of what wants versus needs. And so what he needs is just water, something to eat. He doesn't need a head over, doesn't need a roof over his head. He just needs the world, the air to breathe. Whereas she needs human contact, a bit more security, a bit more safety, but they still need each other. And so you see that them sort of drawing together, that bond, but then how, what their needs and wants are pulling them in different directions. So it's a really fascinating, I think, study on what isolation means to different people. For him, isolation is his salvation. But for her, you know, he is her salvation, but the isolation is not necessary, whereas it's necessary for him. So it's an interesting sort of tale of, you know, how people cope with stress, how they cope with combat stress, and how relationships can help, but how relationships can also be that source of conflict.
Yeah. So do you sort of find that there's much impact on the audience, this film?
It's a very low-key film. It is basically the two of them. And it is, most scenes are the two of them. And there's a lot of things are expressed without being said, without being spoken. So you have to read a lot between the lines. So you get hints that his nightmares are about his combat. He'll never say that. He never says explicitly that he's in the army. But there's a few hints that drop round that would suggest that, yes, he's a combat veteran. And that he's asked this questionnaire, and his reaction to some of the questions would indicate this is someone who is obviously suffering from PTSD, who's been in a combat situation, who is, his way of coping is by shutting the world out. And so, yeah, but it's not explicitly said. And a lot of the people who help them, you can see, yeah, they mean really well. They want to give him a job, something to do. And so for them, it's like, we're giving you the means to help yourself. And he's saying, no, you're just giving me another cage. You're boxing me in. And I want freedom. I don't want more things. And for everything they give him, they're thinking, hey, you don't have many clothes. Here's some clothes. He's like, that's a burden to him. That's a weight of stuff that he doesn't need. He's trying to shed all these things. But they mean well. And I think it's that contrast between what someone needs and what someone wants, and then what people perceive you need and want, that is interesting. So I found it a really interesting film, but it's very low key.
Yeah.
It's very almost like subdued in its tone. And it's all about, it's pivotal on these two characters. It's how much you invest in these two characters. But I found it, really great film.
Do you feel like perhaps this film could help people understand PTSD?
I think it would help people understand that there's different ways of approaching how you help someone with these situations. Because throughout the film, there's almost this contrast between what people perceive as them being homeless, and they regard themselves as homeless. They have a home, it's just a different home. When they had their camp, they weren't homeless. They had a home, but it happened to be in the woods and not using fixed structures. Mm. So they didn't regard themselves as homeless or in need, but everyone else did. So it's finding that, you know, and sometimes people think they're helping and it's what they think you need. Mm-hmm. And all the way through, it's like no one's really listening to what he was saying about, but he didn't really express himself explicitly at all. So he didn't always say, this is what I need. Mm-hmm. He would often say, I don't need.
Right, okay.
I don't need stuff, I don't need things. And so it was just interesting to see.
Does it sort of help you appreciate what you've gotten, that the difference between your wants and needs?
Yes, I mean, it's one of those things. It sounds really pious, doesn't it? But a few years ago, my New Year's resolution, I had the same New Year's resolution every year, and that was to be content with the things that I need. That was my New Year's resolution every year. Mm-hmm. And that I wanted to end the year with less than I started, because I found you get that acquisitiveness, and the pressure is like you're happiest when you acquire, and you know you feel most fulfilled when you're surrounded by things. And my aim, and it's the same aim every year, is to have less by the end of the year than when I started. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to be that person who accumulates lots of stuff, and I'm a pack rat, I've got lots of stuff and I don't need it. Mm-hmm. And so it's recognizing the things that you need regardless of the things that you want, and then controlling that acquisitive side of yourself. So I completely recognize that, because I look around myself and I'm thinking, one year my resolution was to get rid of one thing every day, and I managed it until the end of March, and the only thing that stopped me was I had an illness that I was completely laid up 3 weeks. And for those 3 weeks, I lost that trend of getting up and thinking, what can I get rid of today? But for 3.5 months, I got rid of at least one thing every day. Mm-hmm. It could be a book, it could be clothing, it could be CDs, it could be... At least if it was a thing, I wanted to get rid of it. So I understand completely that desire to have less, to be not be owned by the things that you own. So I got that. But yes, yeah, so it's an interesting... I think it's an interesting thing about... what we think we need and what we actually need.
Yeah. Okay.
I was going to ask, actually, Sharon, if you thought this relationship... I mean, we land in the middle of the film where there is the relationship between the father and the daughter, and they're together. We don't know how particularly they got there much, do we?
No, we don't. You just start... them, it's normal. It's obviously not something that they're just learning how to do. She's adept at moving through the woods, she's adept at foraging, and he's obviously completely comfortable in that environment. They know how to survive. And so, yes, so you start without any backstory. You never find out how they got there, how long they've been there, what led them there, other than these references, sort of oblique references. So,
and then the nanny state intervenes.
Yes.
But in a way, it intervenes possibly 2 years earlier than the relationship might have broken down anyway, because by then I think she's, what, 14, 15?
Yes, so
start,
she was probably ready to start finding her own, what's right for her. Mm. And at the end, the last scene, it's pivotal, but I can't tell you what it is, but it's key. It's key. And we have someone else has joined us.
Yes, sure.
Hello there. I'm sorry I'm so late, just the circumstances, but I was listening, actually, coming along. The last bit.
And you've all seen Leave No Trace.
And I've seen Leave No Trace. And I really, really, really liked this movie. I thought it was a great movie. And the point you just spoken about, father-daughter relationship, it really is, because I've got a daughter myself. And when they get to a certain age, it's sort of really hard to let go, but you have to let go, you know, because they've got their own lives to lead and they've got their own. And I don't normally get emotional in films, but you were saying about the last scene. Got me, I was like, nah, come on, Shawnee, what are you doing? You're like,
but hold it together, hold it together.
But I think the father-daughter thing is you know, to me, it was, I guess it was quite poignant.
Yeah.
I was the only one in the cinema at the time, so...
Yeah, it wasn't full when I went, but anyway, yeah. So there was only three of us when I went to see it.
But you explained the movie absolutely beautifully, and I wish I could be like you with, like, getting rid of something all day, because I'm a real hoarder. Mm-hmm. I've been really good recently, and I've managed to get rid of books and things, but, yeah, I really need to get down on the... Yeah. I'm getting rid of something every day. But yeah, no, this movie is a great movie, and thank you, Sharon, for explaining it all. It's a good movie. Really enjoyed it. I don't know if you've got any reviews of you, because I haven't seen
it. Before we go to your scores, yeah, looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter says 100%. So
wow.
100% of the critics watching it, professional critics, and there was 103 of them, actually said that they thought it was a good film. And there were no Rotten Tomatoes. It says Leave No Trace takes an effectively low-key approach to a potentially sensationalist story and further benefits from the brilliant work by Ben Foster and Thomasin McKenzie. And Matthew Bond of the Mail on Sunday says it's both thought-provoking and life-affirming.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah. Ben Foster, I think, I mean, it's funny with Ben Foster because he's been in some good movies. I mean,
he was in Hell or High Water, wasn't he, last year?
Which
was
took the words right out of
one of
mouth.
The films we both really rated last year.
Was really, really high. And he was also in Hostiles, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
But he played a bit of a strange... He seems to play those characters that are a little bit edgy, a little bit... Yeah. Most of the roles he plays. But, as I say, yeah, the film, for me, I agree with all you critics for a change.
But I think their relationship was really good, because that scene when I was saying about how someone was saying, oh, you're a teenage girl, you know, do you share a tent with your dad?
That's it.
And they're all a bit like, you know, okay, this is not... And she was saying, yeah, it's warmer. Mm. You know, there was it's a pure relationship, isn't
pure
it?
Yeah, pure relationship.
And it's honest, though, they love each other dearly. You can see that they're the most important person in each other's lives. But there's no angle, is there? There's
no angle at all. I mean, they do, I suppose, in the film, they have to... But, I mean, they didn't dwell too long on that, didn't they?
No.
It was just there, any insinuation of anything. It was just very, very, very brief. And I quite liked, I thought the social worker was really...
She meant well, didn't
she?
You
can
see
really
where she was coming from. Because to them, she sees a girl and her father living in the wood, and it's like, we've got to help these people.
Mm. There's something off. The nanny's state, but with a good face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're thinking, we don't need help. And a few times they said, you know, oh, but you're with your home. It's like, no, it's just a different sort of home. we had a home.
That's it, yeah.
This is not what you think is what we want. It's what, you know, what we had.
And just before we take a break then, I've got an audience review here from, here's a good pseudonym, because there was Brian C in the previous one, which wasn't me. This is Scooter P, who gives it 5 out of 5. Haunting and moving film, one that doesn't leave you when you exit the theatre. It's such a quiet movie with nuanced performances from Ben Foster and the excellent Thomasin McKenzie. There were moments that were incredibly uncomfortable, but you could feel the love between a father and a daughter. This should sweep the awards this season. A+. And we'll be back after the break with Sean's film, I think.
We're going to give this a rating quickly.
Yep.
Yeah. Our scores? Oh, I would give it a high 4.
I'll give it a 5. Wouldn't even hesitate.
Right. Thank you.
Your community. Your local station. We are your Vectis Radio. FM 104.6 and online at vectisradio.com.
The White Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983-300037 for more details or to book your ride.
West White Audio, the island's technical troubleshooters. Having problems with your phone, or are your electrics on the blink? Maybe you need your appliances, or your building wiring tested, or just a light fitted. We've got it covered. For friendly, reliable service, call Kelvin on 754666 or click westwhiteaudio.co.uk. All island coverage.
Do you suspect there may be some bullying going on within your company? Have you wondered what, if anything, you can do to stop it? Break the Cycles one-day workshop, Thriving in the Workplace, is the solution to any bullying that may be impacting the smooth running of your organisation, leading to increased staff turnover. There may be negative PR for your company if it's associated with bullying and nothing is done. For more information about this one-day workshop on workplace bullying, click breakthecycle.org.uk or email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk. Or you can call us on 01983 754 666 for an informal chat.
Jewson, the national name with a local heart. We see the Four P's project as a fantastic opportunity for young people to gain valuable life skills and receive opportunities that may have passed them by. Congratulations to Vectus Radio for taking this initiative, a truly local community-based radio station. Jewson, the national name with a local heart. For kitchens and building materials, phone us on 525 111 or look for jewson.co.uk.
People have been asking about Hair Bear's all-new record fair.
Can I get an update on my stocks and shares?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I find out when to plant my seedlings?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I hear a debate about the state of the economy in Venezuela?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I hear the best music of the last 50 years in a three-hour selection of classic tracks?
No, it's... Yeah, no, actually, yes, you can. That's what it's all about. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 10pm, Vectis Radio 104.6 FM for Hair Bear's Record Fair. It's all about the music.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Good evening, this is the Movie Review Show. I'm Zeb, I'm with Sharon, Sean and Brian.
Hello again.
Hiya.
Okay, Sean, this is over to you, I think, this one.
This is, yeah. I'm going to... another film I watched this week was Sicario 2 Soldado. Now, I don't know, some of you may have... There was a film, Sicario, which was a few years ago. Anyway, so this is like the sequel. And it's basically a story. Sicario is an assassin, basically. And the story is, it starts off with... It's quite good how it starts off, really, with a bombing of a supermarket. And, of course, the authorities, the CIA, they want to do these black ops things. And they say, we think they're smuggling these... There's no way they could have got into the USA, so they must be being smuggled through Mexico. So they decide to get this Mexican assassin in. And he goes, what do you want to do? He says, oh... We want to start a war between the cartels. So they go on to start this war. They send this guy down to basically kidnap one of the daughters of the cartel bosses and sort of blame it on another one. So they set up all this elaborate scheme to set a war. And then it finds out that the terrorists are actually from New Jersey. So they didn't come through Mexico at all. But meanwhile, this kidnapping that they've done, the CIA says, look, we want it cleared up. Everything's got to be cleared up. We want it all finished. We want, you know, the assassin assassinated. We want this. We want... And so you've got this intrigue of a kidnapping. The girl's in the United States. They've got to try and get her back into Mexico. And so they've got this expedition. It all goes wrong. Mexican police get shot up. There's lots of action in this movie. And so basically it's one of those CIA... intrigue films, you know, that all goes pear-shaped and they think they're going to cause this and things go wrong and the girl sort of escapes and she ends up with all these migrants trying to cross the border and the assassin, they think the assassin's been killed but he hasn't, so he's still around. So I don't want to give too many spoilers to the plot, but I mean, if you like action movies, this is a good action movie.
Does it read as a follow-up to the first film, or is it just like a standalone linked by characters or whatever to the first film?
It's just a character. Just the characters are the same. The assassin
plays. So it's a whole new story. Josh Brolin?
Josh Brolin's in it, yeah. And who's the other chap? Chap that played the collector, and you might know this, Seb. He played the...
Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah, Benicio Del Toro. He's the Sicario. He's the assassin that goes down.
Because Emily Blunt was in the first Sicario,
yeah,
wasn't she?
And I really missed her, because the first Sicario is... But she's not in that at all, so we miss Emily Blunt. And, I think that's really basically is the plot of the story. It's a CIA thinking they're going to do good, goes all wrong, they've got to try and clear it up, and it just turns into a real, you know... a real mess.
Like, are you going to think of something crude then to say?
I was going to, yeah, but it turns into a real
mess.
That
inner filter worked. Yeah. Well done, Sean.
Yeah. There is a name for that, which I think they call it. They've got names for it. But yeah, it just basically all goes wrong, and you've got different groups, different cartels, you know, and you've got the standard really bad Mexican guys, you know, with the tattoos and the
moustaches.
A few of them have got moustaches. You always got, hey, gringo. Yeah, they don't use gringo actually, or hombre, they're all very violent. There's a little subplot that runs through it of like this young boy that lives in America, but he gets involved with the smuggling and all stuff like that, and he actually. Well, no, I can't really say that because that'll be a spoiler of what happens. But anyway,
but there's a subplot.
But there's a subplot, and at the end, it becomes revealed at the end. So, I mean, I only saw this yesterday. So, I mean, I've not seen any reviews because I don't normally look at reviews or anything. But for a good solid action movie, it's pretty good. Did you have any reviews for that?
I didn't actually, because I didn't get your message until after I'd finished doing all my research and printing. Well, it's all yours.
It's
Sean.
All mine, is it? Okay. Well, just to say that, did you see the first one, Sharon?
No, I never actually did.
You never ever just did. Is it not something you'd be interested in?
I probably would, but I'd have to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
And the mood doesn't strike me very often to watch sort of the straightforward action films, I have to say. Though I understand this was like a cut above the usual, so it's one I probably would enjoy if I saw it, but it's finding that, you know, go on and watch it, and I'm never quite there.
Yeah, you've got the obligatory car chases and the shoot 'em ups, you know, and
see, I don't like car chases. I just get a bit fed up with those.
I've got to be honest with you, and car chases in films they sort of bug me a little bit. But this is more of a convoy and sort of
they're going somewhere. They're not just driving around going, I get the feeling like Toad going. Choo choo.
Because
with that sort of equivalent of Toad Hall, really showing off their flash cars.
Because with the car chase movies, they just go on forever, and there's no way cars could take the punishment they take.
No.
And you know, they just go on forever and ever, like the Bourne movies and all that. And it's like, nah, not again. We don't want to see this. The best film, and it was that I think for an actual car chase, proper car, and it wasn't that long, was Baby Driver.
Yes, I know you rated that one because it was real cars in real situations.
It was like real cars, real situations, that, you know, and they didn't take too much in the way of, I mean, you must have seen some of these movies where the cars, they're like smashing them out, they drive everywhere, nothing gets broken, there's no suspension.
They never have to change gear, do they? No. They never have to sort of brake to go around a corner, they're just, I'd rather take my book along with me at that point and then go like, I'm going to read now for 10 minutes until you finish all this malarkey.
Yeah, for sure. But the acting's really good, actually, with Josh Brolin. I really like Josh Brolin, actually.
He seems to have come into his own in the last couple of years, doesn't he?
He really does, yeah.
He was one of those actors who's been there for a long, long time. He's been in films for 20-odd years.
Yeah.
Well, he was in Goonies, wasn't he, for goodness sake? So that was, 30 years ago? And so he's been around ever since, but he's always been, like, hovering just under the radar, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's never broken through, has he?
And then suddenly this year he's like, boom, I'm Thanos.
That's it. And Thanos, and who else was he? Cable.
He's just everywhere, isn't he?
He is, really. And he's great. I mean, I think he was even in the second Sin City as well, wasn't he?
He was in Sin City.
So, yeah.
And loads of film with Kate Winslet. Is it Labour Day?
Labour Day. Yeah. So, yeah. So the acting's good, and also Guillermo del Toro. He just plays himself, really. I think he's the same in most movies. You know, he's that sort of proper, you don't know if he's really bad character or if he's got some good edges about him, because, you know, he's not completely nasty. He's pretty ruthless. He's ruthless when it comes to doing the things he has to do. You know, he's got no compunction, but there's also, you do see that perhaps he has got, you know, another side to him. Perhaps he's got a little bit of compassion for, whereas before in the other film it's like no compassion, no empathy, no nothing, and he's just got to do what he's got to do, whereas in this he sort of, you know, has a little bit of a, should we say, conscience, maybe, has a little bit of a change of heart. So yeah, so on the whole it's a good movie, you know, if you like action, if you like that sort of intrigue, then this you should go and see this movie. I mean, I'm not even sure what certificate it is. I'm assuming it's a 15 and not an 18. I don't really look at certificates now.
Yeah, I think it's a 15. The power of Google here, you see. I've just lost.
By the power of Google.
That's it, yeah. Matthew Bond of the Mail on Sunday says the opening hour is impressive, but slowly the film falls somewhat apart. A victim of its own complexities, assorted loose ends, and misjudged plot twists that leave one confused and not really caring.
I suppose I can relate to that to a certain, like I say, things do, you know, there is a lot of things going on. So yeah, that's probably a fair critique, really, I would think. So
yeah, it got a 64% tomatometer or tomatoometer measure, which is not a particularly high one.
No, it's not. It's
normally get about 70,
sort of an average one.
Plus.
Yeah.
That's the critics. Any of the audience? I'll have a quick shifty here. It sounds to me like an action movie, but that's got a little bit of sort of thought about it, more than some of the other action movies.
Yeah, I think I can understand. I think perhaps it's trying to be too clever. You know, like sometimes you get these movies that just try to be too clever and have too much in. So, and things can become a little bit muddled, you know, because... I guess it's that type of movie. You could become confused, but if you know the characters and you're following the movie. Again, the cinema, there wasn't too many people in the cinema. I think there was two... There were a couple of people at the back, and I normally sit in my normal spot. I was really pleased because I sat in my normal spot on the thing. And two people come in and actually sat down right beside me. And not that I minded that, but it was just quite funny for someone
to come
in
an empty cinema. There's a whole cinema, and then you choose
to sit
next to me.
But they obviously had them seats. But I did talk to these guys. I was talking to a couple, you know, and we were talking about how long the adverts are, and she timed the adverts and trailers 28 minutes.
Yeah.
28 minutes before the film started, and it's like... Come on, have the trailers and then get in the film. So we got into quite a good conversation, really. And they quite enjoyed the movie too. They said, yeah, it was pretty good. But we had a conversation afterwards. I'm one of these people that would talk to anyone. So
it is that bit of music which keeps on repeating and repeating, and I get very close to throwing things at the screen.
That's
sometimes.
Right. That's right.
We've got two audience critics here, both sort of poles apart, really. Which do you want, the good news or the bad news?
Let's have the good one first.
The good one. Fantastic film. Can't wait for the next one. That's Jerry M. with 5 stars.
Okay.
And the not so good was 2.5 stars from Paul K. Ginormous plot hole, as if the first 20 minutes didn't happen. While the journey was kind of fun, the destination was senseless.
I guess that's fair comments.
Two contrasts, isn't it?
Yeah. I could see it going either
So what
way.
Would you be, the 5, 2.5, or somewhere in the middle?
Probably somewhere, yeah. I'd probably give it... I mean, I really like action movies, and I think some of the action sequences are particularly good, especially, you know, because these are obviously trained military. They've obviously been well-trained, so they can... You know, and it's the way they move forward and things, because I'm quite interested in that sort of thing. So, for me, the actual action sequences were really quite as I would imagine them to be, as how they would imagine to go. Because sometimes they can just be over the top with so much lead flying, you know, like A-Team sort of thing. But this was, although there was a lot of lead flying, it was also you could see they'd obviously been. I think in a lot of these movies, they must train, these action movies, they must get proper training, like military training, because the way they move and the way they move forward.
I think they put them through like boot camp type things, don't they? Yeah. If they're supposed to be military.
So for this, I would we're talking about the stars. This would be a 3 stars for me, and probably a solid 3 stars. So you know, the action sequences are particularly good, and I do like some of the acting as well. And the girl who plays the kidnapped girl is really, really good. I mean, I've not seen anything else. I don't know what else she's been in, but I should imagine she'd be on the way to becoming quite a popular actress. The same as the actress in
Leave No Trace.
That's it. Good. Okay, so some good films, some not so good this week, and we'll be back next week with some more films from Sharon.
Goodbye.
And Sean.
Goodbye now.
And
Zeb, see you later.
Yeah, and from me, Brian, I'll be back for another 3 hours after the news at 7, I think.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
No crash in the pits today, yeah.
Thanks.
Access Radio 104.6, the heart.